How do you survive losing your legs in a war zone? Ex-soldier Harry Parker has turned his real-life story into a vivid novel called Anatomy of a Soldier, which describes the tribulations of war through the eyes of the objects and detritus involved, from a pair of boots to an exploding bomb. On today's book review, I'll be joined by Kathy Rensenbrink, contributing editor at The Bookseller, to talk through Parker's debut novel. We'll also discuss a moving new memoir by Helen Stevenson that explores bringing up a child with cystic fibrosis, and the second novel by British writer Anna Ravarat called Lover. That's all ahead of us on today's Monocle Arts Review with me, Matt Alagaya. Stay tuned. We're going to start the show with Love Like Salt, a memoir by Helen Stevenson, whose child Clara was diagnosed with cystic fibrosis. The illness is caused by a gene that controls the flow of water and salt in and out of cells, causing mucus to build up in the sufferer's lungs. There's no cure, and most people who have it don't survive past their 30s. Kathy, welcome to the show. Now, it must be extremely tough to bring up a child who suffers from cystic fibrosis, but Stevenson refuses to let this book become maudlin at any point. Having read it, do you see this as more of a celebration of life?
Well, I think the book is wider, actually, than Clara and her cystic fibrosis, and that is obviously a fascinating strand. But one of the things that I thought was very effective about it is that it is it's a slice of a life. You know, there's lots about art, lots about literature, lots about music, things about living in France, the nature of moving around, and then, of course, family and being a mother, and then finding out that your mothering is going to demand more from you than you might otherwise have expected. So it's a complex, intelligent, beautiful, thoughtful, rather lyrical book. And then, of course, it does have at the heart Clara's health. And I had no idea reading the book, which was quite nerve-wracking. I didn't know what, if anything, had happened to Clara and the family. I was reading it without a sort of a knowledge of what might happen. But actually, it is quite hopeful because lots of gene therapy and there are various trials that are rather good. So it may well be that the outcome for children with cystic fibrosis isn't as bleak as it used to be.
Right. I mean, you mentioned that it covers a lot of ground, and it does for kind of looking at parenthood, music, inheritance, and even storytelling. How does Stevenson kind of organise her story? Is there a set structure, or how does it work?
I think she's very much a writer, which you can tell. You know, this isn't a book where, I think sometimes when writers are, sometimes when people are writing about significant things that have happened to them, you can see that it is the event that has been the engine that has inspired their pen onto the paper. Whereas I don't think that's the case here. I think she's a writer, and probably that's the way she thinks, that's the way she views the world, and would tend to want to write about whatever was happening to her. Though interestingly, I mean, she didn't for a long time. Clara is now 14, so there's probably something interesting in there, actually. This has only just occurred to me. I wonder if she only started writing it when the trial had happened and then the prospects maybe looked a bit certain. I don't know about that. But she handles her material very beautifully. And again, it's a very enjoyable, thoughtful, engaged experience as a reader. There's also a sort of a hefty chunk of it is about her mother, because at the same time as she started having her children, her mother, it became clear that her mother had dementia. So she became a mother at the same time as her mother was losing her capabilities. And that's another sort of very interesting way of looking at this book. There's just loads of angles into this book. You could think it's a book about lots of things.
Right. I mean, it's clearly motherhood then plays a huge sort of central role. I mean, what do we learn about motherhood? Is there something kind of a unique insight that she offers us?
I think one of the reasons why it's probably quite hopeful is I am a mother and often worry about how I would cope if something happened to my child, and I give myself a terrible time because I don't think I would cope very well. And then reading this book, I did kind of think to myself, you know, I spend an awful lot of time telling myself off for future inability to cope with some unforeseen danger. You know, and I don't think I'm alone in this. I think this is what probably specifically women do. And then I thought, actually, maybe I should just chill out on that a bit and trust that if something happens, I will probably be able to work out what to do.
Right. I mean, because actually you obviously wrote a memoir yourself and released it last year called The Last Act of Love. How do you know? I mean, I'm just interested. How do you know when you want to share such a personal part of your life with an sort of anonymous audience?
That's such a big question, isn't it? I mean, I'm honestly not quite sure for me. I'm not making that up. I genuinely don't know. It was a compulsion to write my book. I don't think I would have. When I started writing it, I thought it was destined for the drawer. I didn't ever expect to share it. I thought it was something I would write out of myself, and that getting kind of almost writing the pain out of me would enable me to write novels, which is what I wanted to do. But then that sort of changed in time, and then gradually it just became. And I don't think I would ever have finished it if the drawer had been the destination. I think the reader became very important, and I don't think I would have had the stamina to put the pain onto the page were I not thinking about it having a destination and a purpose.
Love Like Salt by Helen Stevenson is out today, published by Virago. Harry Parker is a British writer, artist and soldier who served in Iraq and Afghanistan. During his time in Afghanistan, he lost both of his legs after stepping on an explosive. It's a storyline that plays out in his debut novel, Anatomy of a Soldier. Cathy, talk us through the plot here. Parker uses a rather unique device here to tell us the story.
Yes, this is very interesting. So the story isn't told from the perspective of Captain Tom. It's told via 45 different objects that surround him. So that includes lots of the surgical instruments that are used to cut off his legs, save his life. The handbag that his mother carries when she visits him, a wadge of dollars, a trainer worn by an insurgent, the medal that he's awarded. There's a nice line about that, because as well as other things, it's funny, this book. There's a nice line about the medal when Captain Tom and one of his friends are saying, you know, but if we need a bit of metal to remind us, and they sort of look down at where their metal legs are. So it's a very interesting device. I wondered right at the start whether I would find it fatiguing, but I didn't. It really works. And he said, I interviewed him for something and I thought this was interesting. He said he sort of wanted the effect to be a bit disorientating and a bit like being blown up. That's what he wants the reader to feel. And I think that is true, but not too disorienting. That's the difficult thing, I think, with books. You don't, as a reader, want to feel too disorientated or kind of fatigued by a narrative technique, but I think this really works.
I mean, it is amazing. It's such an ambitious thing to do, 45 different objects. Does he take on a different voice for each object? I mean, is there a different tonal shift for each time that a new narrator, I guess, is brought in?
Yeah, it's kind of different depending on what's going on. Some of them are quite technical, you know, so some of them are really explaining how a thing happens to you. And then others are much more, there's a much more emotional hinterland. But I think maybe one of the reasons why it really works is I mean, obviously there's lots of different ways of telling a story, but I think this is one way almost to keep up a lightness, perhaps, and a change around it. Because I think the other possible pitfall with a book like this is that you do worry that it might be, you know, a rather gruelling read. Whereas actually, I mean, it's a gruelling read in that there'd be something probably a bit wrong with us if you know, it's not laugh a minute precisely, right. But there's lots of humour, and there's a very light, deft touch to it. And I'm stepping around the word life affirming and trying not to use it, but actually, it probably is that.
Right? Yeah. No. Of course. I mean, it seems to me like this. Object device could almost distance us from the human experience here, which I don't know whether that was intentional. And is that something you found that it did?
No, I didn't. But what I think is quite useful about it is obviously quite a lot of the time Captain Tom is unconscious. So there's after he steps on the mine and is blown up, and then for quite a lot of his operations, for example, of course he wouldn't be conscious. So if we were seeing it from his perspective, that would be really hard. Right. So I think that's quite clever, because you really get an absolute all round. Almost sort of quite factual view of what happens. And of course that was the author, you know, the author was inspired by his own experience, and the it's not quite the same story, but the basics of stepping on a mine and then what happens and going through the rehab chain and learning to walk again, it all happened to him. But of course he had to do quite a lot of research, because he wasn't conscious for quite a lot of that. So he did things like watch amputations on YouTube, which wow. I had no idea you could do, and I won't be doing.
No, probably not.
but I think that was really interesting. But that's one of the things, I think using the objects actually enables quite a wide range of perspectives and for things to be observed in a way that they couldn't be if it was a sort of a more limited narrative.
But do we ever get to know Captain Tom, I guess? I mean, that, because we're seeing him from the outside the whole time, from lots of different angles, do we actually ever get to know him?
Yes, very much so. I mean, that really works. And there's a bit when, Oh, I'm slightly getting a lip wobble just thinking about it. But when I think the object is, it's the bit that the leg that attaches, you know, his, when he's starting to learn with his leg, and there's a bit sort of, you know, it says, you know, he looked at me and then attached me onto his leg. And that's, I mean, there's lots of very emotional bits in it. Right. Maybe that, I mean, that's, I hadn't thought of this before either, but that's another interesting way to look at it, the device, actually, the narrative device, because this is about a man who's been blown up, been blown kind of to bits and had to have bits of him cut off so the rest of him will survive. So it's almost possibly thinking of his body as objects, needing right. new objects.
Yeah, exactly. He's now dependent on, yeah. on objects. That's interesting. Anatomy of a Soldier by Harry Parker is out now, published by Faber and Faber. Kathy, your final literary choice this week is Lover by Anna Ravarat. This is the second novel by the British writer, and it tells the story of a marriage that unravels after lead character Kate finds out her husband Adam is having an affair. Kathy, there are plenty of books out there, and I know I don't need to tell you this, that follow this sort of plot and deal with this subject matter. Does this one stand out for you? And if so, why?
I thought this was really good and really smart. It also pulls off that magic thing of being sad and funny all at the same time and actually almost in the same sentence, which I always enjoy. And it's clever as well, which I enjoyed. So the whole thing is quite interesting. It's not at all straightforward. Kate finds some correspondence of Adam's that makes her feel suspicious. And then there's this long negotiation between them about what has actually happened. And she keeps calling it an affair. And he's insisting that it should be called an inappropriate friendship. And I thought that was quite clever, because I think what it does actually, I think it really pinpoints some of the difficulties in a marriage where there are also small children and potentially money worries. So, you know, people are at work that don't want to be at work. Other people would like to be at work and can't get the work. And I think that's one of the reasons why it's so smart. It's a lot about work as well, and a lot of the humour comes from there. So Kate works for this sort of global hotel chain, and the opening sequence is absolutely hilarious. They're having a customer experience meeting, and it's full of jargon. And it's so funny, and I think anybody who's ever worked in any sort of environment like that will find it hilarious. And there's this sort of frightful woman called Trish who's bullying everybody into trying to think of better things. And she said, "What do our customers want? What do our customers want?" And then Kate just looks up and says, "A good night's sleep," and everyone thinks she's a genius, and they build this whole new marketing strategy about it. Hilarious little details, like there's a signature scent that the different hotels have, this scent that they spray in the lobbies, and then there's a whole thing about whether or not the employees can wear the signature scent if they want to. So that's all. It's all very funny, and then at the same time, you know, the marriage is breaking down, and Kate's trying to really do her best for her children, and the children are very done as well, because I think. Children in fiction is really tricky, and I think it could be a bit twee, you know. But these are really well done and funny. I mean, I have a 6-year-old. I enjoyed all the bits where Kate's children say things like, "You've got a wobbly bottom, mummy," because, you know, sadly, I do know that is true. That's what having a 6-year-old is like.
Tell us a little bit about the author, Anna Ravarat. She comes from a long line of artists and writers, doesn't she?
I loved her first novel, which is called Signs of Life, which I mean, years since I read it, but again, that had a kind of intense relationship at the centre of it.
About an affair, I think.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that, I don't know, I mean, I just really feel very keen to read whatever it is she writes next, because I think she's very talented, and it is a great thing to be able to be sort of meaningful and funny as well. And not, you know, not that many people can do. I think it's one of the things, funny books are hard to come by. You know, it's really difficult to find funny books. And so when somebody can do it, I always think, oh, how wonderful.
Lover by Anna Ravarat hits bookshelves on March 10th and is published by Picador. And that, I'm afraid, brings us to the end of today's show. Thanks very much to my guest, Kathy Rensenbrink. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Matt Alagaya. This show was produced by Holly Fisher and researched by Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Don't forget to tune in to Meet the Writers every Saturday at 1500 UK time, where Georgina Godwin speaks to the authors behind your favourite books. This week, her guest is the Irish author and screenwriter Neil Jordan. Join us again at the same time tomorrow for our weekly film review with The Telegraph's Tim Robey. But for now, thanks very much for listening, and goodbye.